Argue, argue, talk, 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 exaggerate, argue, pontificate, argue, just talk, shut talk, talk. Why won't you listen? Argue, why won't you see? I know the story, just listen to me.
You're better off when you're spouting off. And now, here's your host, Karen Cataline.
And yes, we are here. Welcome to Spouting Off. This is Karen Cataline. It is August 28th, and boy, do I have a show for you. This is the first time I've actually had the pleasure of having two guests on the show, which is an embarrassment of riches, because there's so much to talk about. We are going to zero in on a couple of subjects that maybe a lot of people aren't talking about these days. First, I have a couple of thoughts that I want to, shall we say, get off my chest. But before I do that, I'm going to let you know who I have on the show. In just about 8 minutes, I am going to be joined by Jan Cook, who is a grassroots activist, and you'll hear more about her. She was the one who invited me to go visit something in Denver. It's actually an annual national event called Go Topless Day. Go Topless Day. It's the 11th annual Go Topless Day. And there was one in Denver, Colorado, and Jan invited me to go. We decided to interview some participants, who, by the way, were very lovely and polite. And we just wanted to get an idea of what they were thinking and what they had in mind, what they hoped to accomplish. And we got some interesting videos, some interesting photos. I wrote a commentary on my blog. I wrote a blog post about some of my thoughts. And then at the last minute, not only will I have Jan on in about 7 minutes, but I was able at the last minute to have the pleasure of having Matt Wilson, one of the male organizers of Denver Goes Topless, Colorado. No, that's what it's called. Denver Goes Topless. Let me get it right. And he made a speech at the very beginning of the event, which we were there for. And basically, I was asking him what exactly he said, because I couldn't remember and I wanted to quote him accurately. Well, we got to talking on Facebook and voila, he has agreed to come on the show at around 2:35. So we will welcome him in. I can tell you that we probably don't agree on very much. I've never spoken to him, but I'm so much looking forward to getting his thoughts. Hopefully on that, we won't have a huge amount of time, but that and a whole lot of other things, because he describes himself as a social democrat. So I'm looking forward to finding out what that is, to get his thoughts on Donald Trump and what's going on nationally. We'll have to do it in very short sound bites, but I think we can learn a lot. A few thoughts before we bring on our first guest. The left has suddenly developed an enormous reverence for, just lifting up my X chair here. Oh, I love this chair. And I don't do commercials for it, but Dennis Prager talks about it. I went out and got one. It was great. The left suddenly has this great reverence for a Republican Vietnam War vet. Now, I got to tell you, I don't think that there is another Republican Vietnam War vet that the left would show such enormous respect for if it wasn't an opportunity to feed their Trump hatred addiction. Because an addiction like this requires constant fixes. You've got to constantly be drumming up the public and their hatred. Hasn't been working, but it's been quite fascinating to watch. The one that amazed me, and I don't have the tweet in front of me, I got so swamped this morning trying to get our guests together that I didn't, but there was a quote, there was a tweet by Kathy Griffin, which I probably couldn't even repeat anyway, because it was filled with expletives about how horrified and angry and furious she was that Donald Trump actually wished his thoughts and prayers to the family of John McCain not long after McCain died of brain cancer just a few days ago on Sunday. And her horror and her fury that Trump would dare to comment on John McCain was over the top. And I can understand. I think that Trump's comment about John McCain very early in the campaign was enormously provocative and disrespectful. But we live in a pretty provocative and disrespectful culture. And why is it that only Donald Trump isn't allowed to be that? And I'm allowed to say, you know what, I didn't like that comment. But did that have me making judgments about the whole of his, not only his presidency, but about who he is as a person? Regular listeners of this show know that I have a lot of strong opinions about Donald Trump. And I think Matt Wilson is going to disagree. So I look forward to that. The vindictiveness of John McCain, however, was also almost just as over the top. I know he was angry at what Trump said, but when he said publicly and months ago that he didn't want Donald Trump at his funeral, and then he goes about, you know, planning this huge state funeral, which is fine. I don't have ultra hatred at John McCain. I profoundly disagree with his politics. But the kind of vindictiveness that says to someone, don't come to my funeral when I die, shows an unbelievable amount of emotional investment. I venture to say, and I have nothing to back this up, it's just a hunch, that the reason John McCain hated Donald Trump as much as he did wasn't just a personal affront. Yes, John McCain was known to be an enormously narcissistic kind of guy, but I think it really went further than that. I think John McCain, along with a lot of the leftists that he's invited to his funeral, which at this broadcast hasn't even happened yet, I think he was a committed globalist. And it bothers me that so many globalists refuse to tell the truth about who they are and what they really stand for. They stand for open borders. They stand for ignoring the collateral damage when Americans like Molly Tibbetts get murdered by illegal aliens who should not be here. And the left's attempt to try and change the subject, we don't know. They're trying to say now with the Molly Tibbetts case that it's because it was a male-female issue and Molly Tibbetts was another victimized female. Well, I don't have all of the facts about this case. But one fact I do have is that this guy shouldn't have been in the country. If we had had the rule of law, which, by the way, is not xenophobic, countries all over this world have been allowed to decide who comes in and out of their country. It's called boundaries. If you'd like to put a key under your mat and put a big sign in your front yard telling everyone that they're allowed to come in your house, eat your food, and not only that, but you then are required to educate, feed, and clothe them, then you don't have any good boundaries. A country is not a country if it's not allowed to have boundaries too. But these giant corporations, these crony capitalists, have decided that they don't care about countries, boundaries, languages, borders. Boundaries are good things in your own life and others. I think we'll hear our second guest talking about boundaries. And they're not just for individuals. Being a social worker, I care a great deal about boundaries. And you can only control what you yourself do and say. You can't control others. But you can set a boundary, at least insofar as telling people what you will and will not tolerate. But that gets me off the subject. The thing that bothers me a great deal is that I know for a fact, I don't know for a fact, I believe that one of John McCain's family members, either his daughter Megan or his wife, I guess it's Cindy, I think one of them are going to take his seat. The problem with that is the seat doesn't belong to John McCain. It belongs to the people. And John McCain seemed quite avid about his power, his reach, and his legacy. And I think he was planning for a long time to make sure that one of those two people took his seat in Congress. I think that's atrocious. We are not a country that believes in legacies. We're not a country that reveres kings and queens. We're not a country that was built on the divine rights of kings. That's why I love the Constitution and our founders as I do, because they were the first. The extraordinary founders were the ones that decided that every man and woman took a little bit longer for women to get the vote, but that human beings answered to a higher power. They didn't answer to the power of the state. They answered, you know, they were king of their own castle at the very least. And laws like that, that limit government's power, are what increase the power of everyday individual citizens. That is my thought, and I am appalled that John McCain, I'll betcha, at this date, August 28th, I'll bet you anything that the governor or whomever will appoint, well, I'm thinking he will, somebody who is either going to continue the legacy of John McCain or one of his family members. And people won't be able to say no because John McCain died. And I'm sorry he died. I'm not out there, you know, saying terrible things about him. It just, it busts my chops, okay? And plus the absolute vitriol of the left that is suddenly so patriotic. I mean, they never liked John McCain. They only liked him when he stuck it to the Republicans, which he did frequently. And boy, was he a betrayal. He campaigned on getting rid of Obamacare. And what does he do at the last minute? He says no. The left loved that. They just couldn't get enough of that. And so now they're singing his praises. Just look at the folks that are attending his funeral, and you'll see that he was part of the deep state. He was part of not so much party, but the inner circle of swamp creatures who really were just trying to protect their own power. That's kind of what I think. I'm going to stand by it. And what we're going to do now, because I believe we have our guest on the line, I am pleased and proud to welcome to Spouting Off, Jan Cook.
Karen, thanks for having me. And I look forward to our little quick discussion here. I just want to make a point. You had mentioned in your monologue that we were at that topless, Denver Goes Topless event. I'm glad Matt's coming on with you. You know, I just want to make a quick little comment about that. Someone actually criticized me on Monday, saying that when I had called into another radio show discussing some of our observations and what we thought about everything, they felt that I was being overly polite. You know, that, oh, you were saying how nice they were and how open they were to talk.
They were nice.
But I want to make a comment about that. You know, we talk about all the divisiveness that we have, and having the art of conversation, despite the fact that you may disagree, is an art, especially in 2018. And so I'm not making any apologies, despite the fact that I may not disagree with the movement. I may disagree with the movement, but I'm perfectly willing to hear what they have to say and why they feel this is an important thing to them. The last thing I'll just say on this is, and I'm glad, Matt, and I hope he will continue to come on the show later, but the last thing I'll just say is that for me, you know, inequality or equality is, to me, is a mindset. And I've never had an issue growing up thinking that I was somehow inferior to boys and then men because my DNA and my physicality was different from theirs. I mean, at some point, let's start embracing who we are rather than our minds trying to make us into something else. Now, if someone truly has an issue and they feel that they're a woman and not a man and vice versa, whatever that is that they're going through, I mean, I respect that they are going through that. But again, for me, our DNA is what it is, and I'm not going to pretend that it isn't. And going topless would not make me feel any more equal or less equal to my male counterpart. So I just wanted to make that point.
I'm glad you mentioned that because, as you know, and a lot of listeners may or may not know, I wrote a book called Fat Lash Food Police and the Fear of Thin, and a lot of it had to do with being exposed and being kind of shown off in child beauty pageants and how I gained like 100 pounds unconsciously, subconsciously, because I wanted to cover up, but I didn't know how. Sure. And putting up a lot of weight, putting on a lot of weight is a great way to do that. I draw a huge distinction between exposing and sexualizing children and our environment as adult women. In fact, that's a lot of what the book is I'm putting together now is all about. So it is a profoundly interesting topic. I wish I had 4 hours to do a show so that we could really delve in. What I do want to say is that I had a blast with you, Jan Cook. We had a great time. We brought our dogs. Our dogs were the hit. We both have two very rare breeds. And so people stopped and talked to us. I did not meet one rude or nasty person that morning.
Nope.
I met a lot of people with whom I disagree. And I was also surprised that they didn't see much of a connection to me, too.
Mm-hmm.
And I asked most people that. And the other thing, which I don't know if Matt is listening, but which I learned when I wrote the blog, maybe Matt is a part of this movement here, but the organizer of the movement is actually a person who believes that they've had an extraterrestrial event with someone and believes that, and that's what a lot of this is the founder of. Now, that doesn't mean people can't participate who aren't, but let me get that. I'm pulling it up now just so people know what I'm talking about. Claude Vorilin, known as Ra'el, who claims to have had an encounter with an extraterrestrial. This was total news to me. I had no idea. And says that the extraterrestrial gave him the secrets of life. And then there was another rabbit hole I was ready to go down because the symbol has a swastika inside a Star of David. As one of those people that happens to be a nice Jewish girl, sometimes so not nice, I was a little disturbed by that. I don't think that they are talking about, elevating Nazism. I think that symbol has been around long before that, but it certainly has been controversial. So...
So now,
all of that said, if you don't,
now that all that said, we're going to shift. We're going to shift gears, right? Because
yes,
I'm going to be talking about our
right now
walk away campaign.
Yeah, you've done talk radio, so you know where I was headed with that. So
tell us
why it is and how it is that you and another one of your buddies got together and put together a Walk Away Colorado movement after the Walk Away movement started by Brandon Straka.
Right, which started back in May. This was a gentleman, Brandon Strock, who I've learned that he pronounces, even though it ends with an A, Straka, he pronounces Strock.
Okay.
So Brandon Strock...
Not to be confused with Peter Strzok, okay? We won't
That's
go there.
Right.
Got it.
he was a committed liberal. He was a gay. He is a gay hairdresser out of New York. Put that aside because this has really taken off. He had a meltdown on Facebook after Trump had won. He could not understand why people were supporting Trump. He thought we had all lost our minds, those who had supported Trump. And a conservative friend who he'd known since childhood reached out to him independently, private messaged him, and sent him a video about some mistruths that he was spouting off about on Facebook. And so what happened was, as he looked at the videos, he was so shocked that there were pieces of information that the general news media, like the CNNs, weren't showing the whole story, and this really disturbed him. And so he started doing more and more researching, finding out, my goodness, these people, these newsmakers, are not sharing the full story with us. I've been duped. And then he did the reverse. He started collecting all of this different information, and he created a video, and he called it Walk Away. And from that video,
it was compelling.
And this is just in May, Karen. Now, you got to hear what's going on, because I want your listeners to go out and look on Facebook, hashtag Walk Away Campaign. And if you're in the Colorado area, we have our own little regional group called hashtag Walk Away Colorado on Facebook. And on Twitter, if you're Twitter people, we're at Walk Away Colo, C-O-L-O. But here's what's happening. There is a new show that he's launched as of Monday. He will have this Facebook kind of podcast thing where he'll be live on Facebook at the Walk Away campaign site. And you get little reminders if you're on there. But there's a big event that he's been touting now for and teasing us with for a few weeks. And the launch of it is supposed to be this week. And he's telling us to save the date for October the 26th through 28th. I believe, and so does Joy Overbeck, the co-founder of Walk Away Colorado, hashtag Walk Away Colorado, we think it's a march on Washington. And think about the timing of this. October the 26th to the 28th is right before the midterms.
Right.
It would be really fascinating.
Pretty obvious, yeah.
Jan,
let me ask you, if I could, real quick, what do you think, if you could tick off some of the things that were particularly repugnant to Brandon and the things that you think moved him most strongly to walk away, what are some of those things?
It's, you know, the things he outlines in his video and he continues to speak about on his show and on also the various people that are sending in their video testimonies and written testimonies of why they're walking away, it's a pretty much consistent theme. The intolerance, meaning shutting down, suppressing, oppressing different people's thoughts on whether you are a Trump supporter, whether you're conservative, being bullied, being name-called, shutting down...
Kicked out of restaurants.
Like, kicked out of restaurants, or trying to, a conservative trying to speak at Berkeley and Antifa
liberals like Maxine Waters telling people you should go after them and harass and bully them when they're trying to have dinner.
Exactly.
Know. Yeah,
in
and
fact,
more. But I just wanted you to say some of those things. Yes.
One of the videos that I found really compelling, and it's a new one, is by a former Obama Washington, D.C. intern. He was at the White House. He worked as an intern towards the end of Obama's term and second term, and then he went over and started working under Bernie Sanders. And what he found out was as he was working internally with those two people, Obama and Bernie Sanders, that was an eye-opener, and he thought, oh, my goodness, I can't believe that they are truly about taking away people's guns. They are truly about shutting down
I saw that
speech.
Video. That was a great
Wasn't
video.
Wasn't that incredible?
These videos are wonderful. I mean, they're so different. Every person has kind of a different story and a different thing. But when you see Antifa and these folks who claim that they're against fascism and then they engage in fascism, I find it hard to believe how anybody could be a part of today's Democrat Party. I don't know. I suspect that my next guest will is a Democrat because he says on his site that he's a social Democrat. I'm looking forward to hearing what that is. But I just don't understand. If you were a Democrat, I don't know. He's probably a lot younger than me. But if you were a Democrat maybe 20, 30 years ago, this is not the same party. You know,
I've actually experienced Antifa. After Trump had won, we had a peaceful rally at the Capitol to just, you know, just be celebratory that Trump had won. While we were there, and I want to say there was probably about 500 people with women, children, veterans, all standing there listening to different speeches and local talent and personalities and politicians about what this all could mean on a positive way for Americans. Antifa was all lined up with their masks. They infiltrated, even though the police asked them to have like a wall of where their protest, like an invisible like barrier line. They crossed. They got into the crowd. They had their megaphone. They were shouting obscenities at us and cursing at veterans. One guy had to be close to 80, and this woman, this young woman with a mask on, is just shouting in his ear with her megaphone. And I just got everybody to start chanting USA, USA, and she finally retreated. Well, I got into a Twitter spat with somebody in the Denver market who said, if Antifa was there, then you're a fascist, because they only go after the fascists.
Oh, my God!
That's how they think, you know? Yeah. And here, it was just citizens
it's pure projection.
Celebrating
Trump's win. I mean,
Trump's
I've never seen... That's projection. And projection is when you feel so much hate. Well, that's paranoia. I've done stories about that. You know, when you feel so much hate inside that you can't own it for yourself, you begin to believe that other people hate you. And therein lies the basis for paranoia right there.
Yeah, but, and I just, again, because I know we only have a few more minutes.
Yeah,
we have only
a minute, really. But yes, go ahead.
I want to interject again. Go to the hashtag Walkaway Campaign Facebook page. If you're in the Colorado area, please go to hashtag Walkaway Colorado. We want to hear your stories. Video them. Write them. We just want to hear why you're walking away.
And a lot of people are walking away because the left has gone so off their rockers. But also, I would encourage, if you are not in the Denver area and you want to start something, if you want to start a little trouble, a walk away Cincinnati or a walk away Miami, maybe you want to contact Jan at Walk Away Colorado. It is on Facebook. Make sure you give that again so that you can start one, because I've heard Brandon interviewed on another talk show host that we know, and he's open to that. I think he wants to kind of
I think he's actually going to try to expand it.
Keep the message clear. And I think since you're like a forerunner, you're a trailblazer in this, and you've taken this on, I think people in other markets can contact you and find out how you've done it. So give that again
and I can
for
also,
people.
And I can get them in touch with, we're in, one of the admins for their Walkaway campaign site is actually on our Walkaway Colorado site, because he's here in Denver. So one of the admins actually lives in the Denver market. So please do. Get in touch with us. Let's keep this going. Karen, you know, the pendulum had to shift. You cannot have this crazy hatred, this incredible intolerance, this bullying and victimization. It had to come back. It had to swing in the opposite direction. It's gone
without
too far
a doubt.
Left.
Thank you so much for joining us. So if you want to get a hold of Jan Cook and her partner, Joy Overbeck, please go to Walkaway Colorado on Facebook. Is that right?
That's right. Hashtag Walkaway Colorado.
And you will find them there. We thank you for your work, and thanks for joining us, Jan Cook. We'll try to have you on again soon.
Sounds great, Karen. Take care.
All right. Take care, you too. We're going to be right back with our guest, Matt Wilson, after the break. So please join us, because it should be fun. And then we'll get a little more clarification about Denver Goes Topless and the national movement Go Topless, you know, that just happened August 26th. This is Karen Cataline. Stay with us on Spouting Off.
Do you have a secret that's been bothering you? Have you been wondering if what you're thinking or feeling is normal? Is there someone with whom you've needed to clear the air, but you haven't been able to find the right words? Sometimes you need an objective, second opinion to help you see your problem more clearly. Ask Aunt Emma, and she'll help you move past what's getting in your way. She's a former therapist who is wise and caring, but instead of therapy, she'll give you terrific advice. It's free to ask Aunt Emma and explain your need, problem, or question. If you both agree, you pay only $1.39 a minute. It's anonymous, it's confidential, and you'll be surprised at how effective it is. You can ask Aunt Emma by going to facebook.com/AskAuntEmma. There, you'll find her phone number and extension number. That's facebook.com/AskAuntEmma. Ask Aunt Emma today.
Are you among the millions of Americans who feel uncertain when it comes to their health care? We are happy to inform you that there is a solution, and that solution is Liberty HealthShare. It's a community of like-minded people who work together to pay for their medical costs. You choose your doctor and hospital, starting at $107 a month for a single, up to $449 a month for a family. That's mom, dad, and all kids. For more info, visit libertyhealthshare.org. That's libertyhealthshare.org.
This is Karen Cataline, and that was a quick jump. Welcome back. I am delighted to be joined by our guest, Matt Wilson, who was the Denver Goes Topless event happened this past Sunday, August 26th. And we opened at the beginning of the show saying that we went down there, Jan Cook and myself, to talk to people. And here we have one of the co-organizers of the event. It is a national event. It's called the 11th Annual Go Topless Day in general. So welcome to the program, Matt Wilson. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks. Good to be here. Nice to meet you.
Well, nice to meet you too, and I really do appreciate you coming on. I'm looking at your Facebook page before we get into Go Topless Colorado, and there's just so much to talk about there. I wish I had 2 hours. You describe yourself on your Facebook page as a father, a feminist, ex-military, and thank you for your service, and a social democrat. So the first thing I wanted to ask you is, how do you, if someone who didn't know, and I don't know exactly, what is a social democrat in your opinion?
Well, a social democrat is just basically a democrat that recognizes that some of the things that we do in America are socialist policies, such as trash collection, public schools, fire departments, police departments. All of those are socialist programs, Medicaid, Medicare, food assistance, things like that. They're all socialist programs. And so with the media and the way they're divisive and sensationalist when it comes to democratic socialists, there's a lot of linking that or describing that as socialism. The big difference between socialism and democratic socialism is socialism believes that the people should own, the public should own all companies and means of production in the country. Democratic socialists believe in capitalism. We believe in being rewarded for your hard work. But we figure that if we have 90% of the wealth going to the top 1% of the country, there's a problem with that because we need to be controlled as a democracy, not an oligarchy.
Well, we aren't a democracy. We're actually a republic. But so you're not just a social democrat. You're a democratic socialist, right? Like Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez. Are you pretty much in agreement with her viewpoint on a lot of stuff? Because she's an avowed democratic socialist, like Bernie Sanders.
Well, even she was very careful to distinguish herself from and try to separate herself from the sensationalism around that label. Because too often, again, it gets confused with socialists like Marxism, Russia, communism, things like that. And that's just not what we're about.
Well,
but as far as her platforms, okay. A lot of her platforms, as far as having universal health care and having public education go up through college instead of just through high school, yeah, I agree with her on those things.
Okay. So one of my cartoons that I don't have up right now, it says, and this is how different you and I are, and that's why I'm having you on, and I'm delighted that you're on. It says, democratic socialism, where everything is free except you. And I'll have to have you on again to discuss this because you're touching on one of my favorite subjects. There's a reason I believe in limited government.
Common caricature. Yep.
What? What's a caricature?
It's a common caricature. So,
what is?
As far as us thinking everything is free, you know, we don't think everything is free.
Well, who's going to pay for it if you want to give everybody free college? If you're going to give everybody free college, then don't you have to redistribute wealth in order to give it to those you want to give it to?
Well, I think we need to classify it more along the lines of the same way we do police and fire departments and high schools and things like that. Everybody out of their little taxes goes ahead and pitches in just a little bit so that everyone can have that service. That way, if your house burns down, the fire trucks don't ask the people, hey, do you have fire insurance? Oh, you don't. Well, we're just going to let it burn.
Got it.
You know, you pitch in a little bit, you get these services, and that way everybody can benefit, not just the rich.
Maybe I could ask you this, and then we'll try to get to topless issues, because there's a lot.
Sure.
It's wonderful stuff. Maybe I'll have to have you on a whole hour. Is there anything, in your opinion, that ought to be private and separate from the government? That an individual has the right to own and have power over by himself without the government involvement or intrusion? What would that be?
Well, absolutely. I believe that that one of the best things about this country is that we can own our own business, that we can try to make something of ourselves, make something of a product. We can try to support our families. All democratic socialists believe in that. We don't believe that all companies should be owned by the state. And so to continue to paint a picture as if they do is actually a misconstrued.
Okay. Well, and a lot of us disagree on the role of government, how much government, rather than, you know, to me, it's a continuum. So on that, we could probably discuss, right? Let me shift gears a little bit and talk about this this Denver Goes Topless movement that we visited. And if you could kind of just give us an idea of why, I mean, you were one of the organizers and you gave one of the speeches, and I'm so glad you gave me that quote. In fact, I think I'll just read it real quick. People get all riled up about Trump's latest tweets and other headlines that come and go. But meanwhile, month after month, year after year, women continue to be objectified and hypersexualized in the media. This has profound effects. It feeds into male entitlement, harassment, slut-shaming, and rape culture. Women still can't go topless in the same context as men without being called sluts, indecent, or disgusting. When people claim that women are already equal to men, what does it mean when we define women this way? So tell us more about that. I'm glad I got that quote from you. And, you know, why is this issue so are you so passionate about this particular issue?
Well, I have two daughters, and they are aged 18 and 21 now. And when they were born and as they were growing, it really helped shift my perspective as one who grew up in a house full of boys. I have three brothers, and I grew up with my dad. And so seeing and being able to empathize more with a female perspective helped open my eyes to the double standards that are perpetuated nowadays and how what they endure that me as a man, I never had to.
Can
so
I ask
I've
you?
Realized there are, go ahead.
Yeah, I'm sorry. This thing, I didn't get anybody that I interviewed who we really got into this. And many people said that as long as men can go with their shirts off, women should be allowed to go with shirts off too, because it makes men and women unequal. My question would be, why is it so necessary for men and women to be so alike when it's pretty much been proven that we're different? And what's wrong with that? You know what the French say, vive la différence. Why is it a problem that men and women are different?
It's not a problem that men and women are different. You know, women have breasts, men have pecs, chests. Both can be sexualized and both can be seen as without sexualization.
Right.
it's okay to appreciate those differences. But as far as equal and fair, and different and fair, there are double standards that make that are just simply unfair. To have, like a man, it doesn't matter if a man is walking around topless and he's strutting his stuff trying to be sexual, versus a woman who is walking down the street not trying to be sexual, the woman will still get all of the hatred and vitriol and potential fines and arrest, even though the context you would think would be more fair if she could do the same thing as a man and not have the problem.
So you're really hoping. Sorry, mm-hmm. Did you have something more to say?
Well, it just really goes down to how we view women and how they're portrayed. I think that when all we see in media is images of women being sexualized, and the only time we ever see skin in media is in a sexual context, I think Americans forget that nudity and sexuality, though they can overlap, they are not the same thing. Context and behavior make a difference. And so
I think I agree with you there.
Of course women are different. Women and men, they appreciate their differences all the time. Women walk different. They have different kinds of pelvises, and that men get fascinated with that. Men tend, because of testosterone, have bigger muscles than women. Women get fascinated with that, you know, and that doesn't exclude, you know, same gender attraction. You know, we all get fascinated by the differences in our body, and that's completely normal and completely natural. And that fascination can occur with or without clothes. There's nothing wrong with that. Sexuality is a healthy part of what it means to be a human being. At the same time, we don't accept that we see those differences in each other and allow those differences to lose control of our minds or our behavior. We still are, whether a person has clothes on or no clothes on, we still have to show boundaries, respect, and to treat people as people, not just as objects. And I think
that I totally agree with you there that mm-hmm. actions and behavior are totally different than what you think and you feel. But you can't manipulate other people's behavior, except, of course, if they cross the line into committing a crime. So are you trying
I disagree. I think that our behavior is already being manipulated by the images that we take in and see every day. I think our culture manipulates us in ways we don't even realize. You know, you think about it, you go to Japan or Asia, and most of what they eat is rice. You come over to America, one of our biggest foods is hamburgers. It's just the culture that we grow up in. And so what I'm trying to call attention to is that the culture that we grow up in here in America, women are so predominantly sexualized and objectified in media, commercials, Hardee's, with bikini girls on cars selling burgers, etc. I think they're so objectified in our media today that it conditions people to primarily think of women's bodies in an objectified manner.
Otherwise, do you want to stop that somehow? Do you want to stop women from being sexualized in the media? I mean, that has been going on since well before. I mean, Hollywood actually, you know, in the mm-hmm. 1910s, 1920s started that, and it certainly it's been part mm-hmm. of the culture before that. So would you like to, is there something you want to do to stop that?
I think that we can help change it for the better. I think that as far as the objectification, it comes and goes. You know, back in the 50s when you're watching Leave It to Beaver, the objectification was different. The social roles that were being portrayed were different. You know, woman stayed home and cooked. That was her expected role. Nowadays, our economy doesn't really allow one person to stay home nearly as easily and be a breadwinner, male or female. So most people nowadays have to both work. And so,
well, there was the women's movement that basically just demonized women for staying home. I mean, this collective notion that we all have to behave the same way. Whatever happened? Mm-hmm. Here's what I don't understand. Whatever happened to going against the culture, maybe going against the grain a little bit? And just because the culture says one thing doesn't mean you have to bend to it. But this mm-hmm. movement
seems
to want to...
Well, isn't that exactly what we're doing? We are going counterculture. because right now it's a case where a woman's body is so sexualized that if she takes off her shirt, oh my God, it's a scandal. And I think that we need to struggle against that type of perception. A woman's body need not be hyper-sexualized to the point where we can't distinguish between sexual and non-sexual behavior.
Well, I think you know, once men get to know women, that they become more human. I mean, these broad generalizations, sort of like you said, male entitlement, harassment, slut-shaming. Define for me slut-shaming. What is that?
Well, quick definition of slut-shaming is if a woman is wearing attire that you would associate with someone who's being sexual, whether it be tights, tight pants, yoga pants, any shirt that shows off a bra strap, and then all of a sudden you look at that outfit and you automatically assume, oh, she's a slut. Which that comment can come from both men and women. They're both just as judgmental when it comes to that sometimes. That would be slut-shaming. Basically, shaming a person for having any sort of sexuality. It's pretty ironic that we worship sexuality so much in commercials and media where sex sells and marketing is so prevalent. But if a person shows their own sexuality in mainstream and in public, then all of a sudden it's something to be taboo and shamed. A double standard.
Well, I haven't seen that, but it's fascinating to talk to you and get your perspective on some of these things. I heard you say at the rally, it struck me, because whenever someone mentions boundaries, I always, my ears perk up. And you said, now, and there were a lot of cameras there. And you said, if you want to take someone's picture who happens to be topless, make sure you ask their permission, and because we want to have healthy boundaries. Now, now, I would do that anyway. I think we did that. In fact, you know, we didn't really show them with their tops off because we knew we were going to put it on the internet. But I would think, I would ask anybody as a polite thing to before I took their picture. I don't always like my picture taken. But if someone is in public, as opposed to private, it seems like it's backwards to put yourself out there in a public place where nothing is private because it's public, after all, and then tell people that it's up to them to have the healthy boundaries rather than you. You've already crossed the boundary by being in public. Therefore, technically speaking, just like there are red light cameras, too many of them, as far as I'm concerned. You're asking, to me, it seems backwards. If you want to be private, go into private. If you want to be in public, be public. But don't be public.
Okay, so let me answer your question, because I hear what you're saying. And it's something that we addressed with participants ahead of time, and it's something we addressed on stage. What I told everybody ahead of time is that, yes, this is a public event, and so you can expect that being such a radically different sight than you normally see going down the street in downtown Denver, people are going to whip out their cell phones and take pictures. You know, bystanders will do that, expect it. This is something, an activity you can be proud of. And so if you're okay with that, you know, then by all means participate. As far as the photographers within the actual group while we were at the site and during the march, though, I told the photographers there that if they were going to take close-up pictures and have people pose, I requested that they ask first in order just to be respectful. Yes, because we do try to avoid having a bunch of photographers within the group, but we do try to prepare the participants for bystanders with cell phones outside the group.
Well, there were a lot of men on the sidelines with cameras, and I don't think they were part of your movement, but they seemed like they were there to gawk, and that's not illegal if you're in public to gawk.
Correct, and I never said it was. Yeah, that's exactly what I said.
No, I understand.
Prepared for.
There
not
was
only
something
should they
else.
Be prepared for
Go
that.
Go ahead.
not only should they be prepared for that, but you really think about it, if women and men were truly equal, then we would not have this reaction. What we really hope is that someday, you know, just like in Europe, if a person's out sunbathing in the park, she's not going to have to worry about a bunch of people whipping out their cell phones, because it's just really not a big deal, and people will automatically have respect for people.
Matt, why should we be like Europe? I don't want to be like Europe. I think Europe is a mess. So because you can walk topless on a beach doesn't necessarily mean that Europe is more evolved than America. My question is this constant need to portray men and women as the same, I think does a disservice to both. And you've already said you don't agree that, you know, that there's definitely differences. Why should I be offended if the culture would like me to have my top on? I guess the reason that quote was so interesting to me is because there's such bigger fish to fry, in my opinion. Fish that you and I disagree with frying, by the way. But there's so many profound issues today to think that somehow my freedom is hindered because I can't take my shirt off in public.
Okay.
I have no problem with
you. I can only answer
doing
one thing at a time. You're bringing up a lot of different things, and I can only answer one thing at a time. So,
sure.
Give me a chance. As far as the toplessness in Europe, yes, they have beaches out there where you can go topless and nobody cares. I even have a cartoon posted, you know, where there's a European couple versus an American on his computer, and the American on the computer is like, oh my God, boobs, and the European couple's, oh great, a tourist who's never seen boobs before. You know, for them, it's not that big a deal. Now, by pointing out that as a positive attribute to Europe does not mean that I'm wanting America to become like Europe in all ways. So,
and I'm not sure that's positive, in my opinion, but that's a different story.
I understand that. But the thing is, what we're trying to shine a spotlight on is, some people might be more comfortable taking with their tops on, and that's okay. Some people might be comfortable with other people keeping their tops on, and you know, that's okay too. But if what we're trying to spotlight is why it is it so important that women keep their tops on. You know, it's not necessarily the act itself, but the reasoning why culture is like that, and what are the ramifications of the reasons why culture is this way. It used to be that men could not go topless on a beach. And when men went topless on a beach, they were cause for arrest and harassment and ridicule and shame and scandal. And that was just back in the 30s. Men had to fight and get arrested for the right to be able to go topless in public. And now it's an accepted facet of reality and society. And nobody makes a big deal of that. I think if men can do that, then women really should be able to do the same thing. It'll take some time, maybe some growing.
But my question, and I don't necessarily, I wasn't offended. I didn't think any person should be arrested. And, of course, in Denver, they weren't going to, because it is legal to be topless in Denver, as far as I understand it. So they weren't protesting because they could do it, right? So there's nothing to protest because you already have that right. Correct?
That's why we're careful to phrase this as a celebration when it comes to Denver. Yeah.
All right. Okay.
Because in Denver, yes, it is legal, but it's not legal everywhere. And even in Colorado, cities and outside of Colorado as well, cities are able to still have ordinances on their books that specify a woman's nipple is illegal and can be cause for arrest.
Yeah. Okay. So, well, as a libertarian type person in general, I don't, you know, I believe in less laws rather than more. We're going to have to wrap this up, but I wanted to give you a chance, and I would definitely like to have you on to talk about other things in the future. I think you're very articulate. You said you were a little bit introverted, but you're doing a splendid job.
Thank
you know, expressing yourself and your points. Pardon me? I didn't hear you.
This is my first time on a podcast. So before we go, let me go ahead and make sure we are not part of the National Go Topless organization, the Raylands. We were partially inspired by them, but we're also inspired by the Free the Nipple movie and the Free the Nipple movement. We are inspired by the Me Too movement. We are trying to make a difference in the way, I think I made it clear, you know, the way women are perceived. I do have a website. It's called DenverGoTopless.com. It's actually Denver Go Topless, not Denver Goes Topless. I am actually the creator of the website.
DenverGoTopless.com.
DenverGoTopless.com.
GoTopless.com. So people can visit you there. You mentioned the Me Too movement, and I would love to get your thoughts on that. How were you inspired by the Me Too movement? And as I wrote in my blog post, is it contradictory? Is it complementary? How do those two either go together or not?
Well, observations from the Me Too movement. The Me Too movement is basically women coming forward and saying, look, this is what our society has produced by objectifying us. They've produced situations where men feel entitled to harass, objectify, and in bad cases, assault and rape women. It's prevalent. It's common. Men often do not get consequences for their actions, or the consequences are a slap on the wrist, or women are even blamed for being victims of men who feel entitled. A woman walking down the street can get whistled at and harassed, and if she turns around and says, hey, you know, I don't appreciate that, she's in danger of getting assaulted by a man whose feelings of entitlement have been hurt.
Well, I don't know if that's true. I mean, setting boundaries doesn't mean that you're automatically in danger of being assaulted. You can say no and not necessarily think you're going to be assaulted. This leads us into so many wonderful
subjects. You personally might not, but it happens far too often. And so with the Me Too movement is about that. It's about women coming forward and saying, hey, yes, you're not the only one who's had to deal with this type of behavior. We've also had to deal with this. This is my story. And you have thousands up to millions of women who have the same stories every day.
Do you think that the movement could be abused and that women could falsely accuse men? Because they're being given an enormous amount of power today.
Mm-hmm. Well, I wouldn't say that they're being given an enormous amount of power. I think that what they're being given is an enormous platform. There's a difference. Because, yes, there are false accusers, but the ratio of that is extremely wide. You know, you have,
I don't think we know that yet. I think that there have been cases
I've looked up on the stats on that, on rape prevention sites, rape tracking sites. And the ratio of false accusers.
I would beg to differ. There are cases where due process has not happened because a woman made an accusation and there was no due process.
Anyone can find outliers when you're looking at statistics, but when you're looking at overall numbers, no, it's true. The vast majority of women getting raped or getting assaulted are actual cases of rape and assault. And
do you think that women should be believed blanketly?
I think every case should be looked at, based on the evidence at hand. I'm not going to say
that. Well, that we agree. That we agree. And I'm glad you said that.
I don't. Absolutely.
Pardon me?
Absolutely. Got to be fair. Got to be logical.
If we can agree on that, we've done well. Because I think the due process has been thrown out the window in many cases, and I'm about to write something up about that in the near future. Do you have anything last, the last word? I'll give you the last word in the last, 30 seconds that we have to wrap this up. I thank you again for joining us here on Spouting Off. I apologize for the technical glitches that happen sometimes with live talk radio. I'm sorry it happened with you. What would you like to say in wrapping up?
Well, I guess I want to make it clear that this type of movement is not an exhibitionist movement. It's not a sexualizing movement. You know, what topless equality really is a crucial pivot point and dialogue opener. What it really does is get conversation started about how do we really think about women's bodies, why do we think we do the way we do about women's bodies, and how are we going to be able to go forward and improve things, not just for women, but the way men interact with women based on how they're portrayed in media.
Okay, I thank you. I've got to just comment one more thing, and that is that mm-hmm. what concerns me about this greatly, Matt, and maybe I'll have you on again, is these mm-hmm. large-scale prescriptions for behavior in which some people think that, you know, a movement like this or any movement can we make these broad generalizations about people as to how they behave or don't behave, and these collectivist notions that, in my opinion, make matters worse, not better. Yes, there is kind of a mores. There are mores in the culture. Mm-hmm. But ultimately, we are responsible for our own behavior individually, not large mm-hmm. groups. I don't like when men get portrayed as always perpetrators and women are always mm-hmm. portrayed as victims. This doesn't serve
Correct.
Anyone.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think you have kind of a double standard there. I think, yes, I agree with you that people should always take responsibility for their own behavior, yet I don't believe that people do. I think most people, far too often, it's so much easier to point fingers at other people. Well, look at what they're doing. Look at what they're saying. Look at what she's wearing, et cetera, when in fact...
Yeah, but those things aren't illegal. That behavior may take issue with is not illegal, mm-hmm. and you can't make a law against it. You can dislike it, you can disapprove, but that's the question. Are you going to prescribe behavior for everyone, or are you going to say, this is the thing that I think we get into. Anyway, you see, mm-hmm. I have a passion for this subject, and you clearly do too.
Right.
I think we ought to leave it there for now because, you know, there's more to say. I hope we've given people something to think about. And once again, I thank you for joining us. That's all the time we have for this extended version of Spouting Off. This is Karen Cataline. Join us next week when there's going to be a whole lot more to spout off about here on Spouting Off.